You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Here we go.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the After Laugh. Man, I'm really excited. I know I say that most of the time, but I actually mean it this time. I got one of my all-time favorite comics, Alonzo Bowden. And you know, it's funny because we've never hung out. You're sort of, look, you're a comedy legend at this point. I know you probably don't want to hear that shit, but you really are. The first time, I just have to say, the first time I saw you was Dublin's before I was a comic. And it was like Dane Cook, Ralphie May, Bobby Lee. It's amazing how many people came out of Dublin,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, that was such an incredibly creative time. You know, yeah. I compare Dublin's for us to like the I guess it would be the Improv in New York, like when...
Or Catch a Rising Star.
Or Catch, yeah, back when, yeah, like Seinfeld and Paul Reiser, yeah, and Damon Wayans and all of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when they were all doing that, that's the way Dublin's was for us.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken Jeong, Sebastian.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody. Everybody
was
there. Yeah.
And I wasn't a comic yet. I was actually out for... I just graduated grad school. Or maybe I was still in grad school for acting. And I just came out with a buddy, and we went to Dublin's. I think the draw for a lot of people, it was a bar that doesn't exist anymore on Sunset Boulevard. A lot of hot women all the time.
Yeah,
Jay Davis
absolutely.
Is a hot woman magnet for a
absolutely.
Reason. I still don't understand. But the comics on the show, and this is before I was even really a stand-up fan. I wasn't doing it. I didn't realize that I was watching something really special. It's amazing. I feel like there should be a documentary on it or something.
Well, so does Jay. Jay thinks
yeah, of course
that.
He does.
You know, it was... You know, it started out as basically as an open mic. There was a little bar next to Dublin's, and they had like the bar was downstairs, and we would do it on Tuesdays, and it was me, Dane, and Darren Carter, and a few other people. And this is how I started with the thing of not having any material.
Yeah.
I would literally bring my notebook and just like read ideas and do it. And there might have been...
You were like alt before alt was a thing,
yeah,
kind of.
I guess
yeah.
So. There might have been 30 people there, 50 tops, right? And then Ahmed and Jay moved it to Dublin's. And at the same time, Dane was becoming Dane.
Yes.
Right? It was like parallel. So he was a big draw because, and I didn't even realize it at the time, how big he was with colleges and that generation. You
yeah.
know, he was becoming the king of the colleges. And then it was when social media first started, right?
MySpace was kind of blown
up. And at that time, Facebook, you had to be in college to get on
Facebook.
That's
right. I remember that. Yeah.
Right. So Dane knew, we didn't know anything about this, right?
Of course.
Like I joked that, you know, he built this, and I remember he was talking about, he built a website for like $10,000, like this fully interactive website. And I was like, and that's when we only thought the internet was for porn. We did not know it had a use beyond porn and yeah. the occasional email. And, you know, so he was growing, but also Dublin's was becoming a scene because people, they were like, man, these comics are good.
Yeah.
We were pros. This was like our pro open mic.
Yeah.
It was where pros could work out. And the women, like you said, it was comical. The staff was Coyote Ugly before there was a Coyote
yeah.
Ugly. The women who worked at Dublin's were these insanely hot, and they were funny. You know,
mm-hmm.
that was the thing. They were cool, and the whole vibe was good. And then Hollywood kind of took off, right? Vince Vaughn would come every week because
yeah.
he was friends with Ahmed, and then all these different stars started dropping in and hanging out. But to me, it remained an open mic.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go up at the end of the show every week and just
yeah,
work.
You were the kind of the closer.
Work.
And you would sit on the stool.
I sat on the stool.
Everyone else was like running around the booth and Dane was jumping on shit. And you would just sit there and plant and follow Dane and murder, dude.
Well, it was part of that was, and again, me and Dane are friends. And we've been friends a long time. And I said, listen, man, I'm not trying to be Dane.
Yeah.
Like at that time, and this is how I always said that Dane wasn't a comic. He's a rock star.
Yeah.
It's a different energy. It was a different, whole different thing. And all these people are trying to be Dane. And I said, man, they're imitating you before you're even famous. That's how,
yeah.
That's how you know you knew he was on a thing, right? But it was like, man, I'm 6'3". At that time, I was a muscular 230. Now I'm a fat 260.
Shut the fuck up.
But anyway, I said, the last thing I need to do is start jumping on the furniture.
Dude.
Can you imagine how scared the front row would have been?
The white women would have ran for
the
hills.
So I just sat on the stool. I worked ideas. And it was a great vibe because it was like a yin and a yang between he and I.
Yeah.
And but always, I think, always a friendship, always a mutual respect. And then the comics just started coming when they heard about it. And every, like we were talking a minute ago about Rogan, you know, Joe would drop in. I mean, Chappelle would drop in. You know, any and everybody who came through town dropped in to do Dublins. And
yeah.
For, you know, for 3 years, man, it was great. But it was so creative for me. And it, the funniest thing about it to me was toward the end of Dublin's, when Dublin's was winding down, I got on Last Comic Standing.
That's right, yeah.
And the fans from Dublin's were like, we didn't know you could do regular comedy. Like, they thought all I ever did, maybe I should have stayed with it, but they thought all I ever did was sit on a stool and do crowd work.
That's so funny.
They were fascinated that I actually stood up and did comedy.
Yeah, I think if you're not a comic watching stand-up, it's already like a magic show. But when you see someone do crowd work, they have their whole set. It's literally like you're watching, like, where the fuck did the king go? You have no idea how they're able to work that fast. And of course, as you start doing it more and more and more, I mean, you're still one of the best at it, but you realize that some of the tricks are kind of built in from experience.
Yeah. You know, there's not a lot. You start recognizing things that you hear, and there's not a lot that's going to surprise you. I still love when something surprises me, like if I ask, what do you do for a living? Like,
yeah.
I remember I was doing a gig once, and this woman from Cincinnati, and it was like, what do you do? And she was like, I do quality control. And I'm like, come on. She did quality control on caskets for a funeral company. And I was like, who knew?
Yeah.
Because who's going to complain?
Yeah.
Why do they have quality control? But so every now and then you get something like that. That's just a hilarious, unexpected, you know, response.
I still remember when the first, by the way, we just have a fan of Alonzo Bowden and fellow motorcycle enthusiast, Carolyn Clem.
Hello, Karen.
Who showed up, of course, late. So
and
didn't
she
get
rode
to hang out.
She rode in a dress. So there's something I've never done. See, now you talk about surprises. Now, I've been riding motorcycles for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Never in a dress.
So or high heels?
You've already won. I'm not that progressive.
So if you've been riding a motorcycle for 40 years, you must have had some hairy moments. Was there ever a moment where you're like, fuck this, no more, and then you got back on it? No.
No, never that. I've been hit by cars a few times. One time knocked off the bike and broke my wrist. This is one of those, and you've had this experience, where you have a set you wish you had on tape.
Yes.
So it was, I'm riding to the Laugh Factory, and right here on Sunset, somebody like tried to make a left, like from a side street across Sunset,
mm-hmm.
You know.
The four lane left
you're
turn.
Not gonna do at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so they tapped my bike, and my bike fell over, right? Like I went to the factory, and I was so mad. Like, I went into this whole rant about stupid drive, and it was hilarious, you know? And I was like, man, I wish, because I couldn't get that energy again because
yes.
I was so mad at their stupidity in that moment.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I wish I remembered anything I said.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That night.
And now you're going out, you're driving around like waiting to be hit by a car. Like, come on, you need a really good set right now.
But it was because it was one of those things. It wasn't really a hit. It was more like a tap. It was just a stupid, because, you know, Saturday night on Sunset in non-pandemic times, you're moving at 5 miles an hour. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, no, you're not making a left across this, like you said, across three lanes of traffic. Like, the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. Okay, you're not on mic, Carolyn, so either shut up. And road rage is a real thing when you're in a car, but I have an electric bike that you can see around the corner there. And when someone almost hits you or does hit you and you're that vulnerable, it taps into a rage that is like unparalleled. Have you had moments where you're like, I'm going to murder this
person? Well, you know, we used to, okay, this is probably in the 90s, people wouldn't, we'd knock mirrors off.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go by and just punch or kick your mirror under the theory, well, you're not using it. So why, and then that kind of chilled out. I think freeway shootings kind of, we said, yeah, we should stop doing that. Now they're shooting each other. But yeah, you get mad. But you mentioned the electric bike. I ride bicycles on occasion, right? And I mean, the lack of, like, motorcycles get no respect, but bicycles, I mean, people have to kill you on a bicycle.
Yeah.
When I see those people zooming around on their bikes, and I grew up in New York. I grew up riding a bicycle through Manhattan, you know, with the whistle, and you're cutting through traffic.
And that's before they had bike lanes in New York.
Yeah, it was fun. But out here, they're going, so like I had a friend, she had her pelvis shattered because somebody rear-ended her downtown on her bicycle. Like on a motorcycle, we have enough power to escape and to fight back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually quicker and more maneuverable than any car. But when you're on a bicycle, man, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane. And now what's funny, pandemic driving.
Oh, yeah, pandemic driving. What's that?
People are going so fast, right, because there's no traffic and they're not used to it.
So they're just like joyriding.
People are on the 101 thinking the speed limit is 101.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing 80 on the 101 and get past by like a Toyota Tercel, you know, that's doing 115 or something like that, you know. And people are driving crazy because there's room.
Yeah.
And I've trained to go fast. Like I've taken driving classes and motorcycle classes, and I'm not an expert, but I think I'm better than most.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it on a motorcycle or in a car that's designed to go fast. You know, a Camry's not designed to do 110. Like,
yeah.
Slow the fuck down.
Yeah, I've noticed that when I'm driving, a lot of times people will be behind me, like during the pandemic, like honking. What the fuck? Some people are like taking photos of my license plate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, where the fuck do you have to be that you're driving so fast? There's nowhere to be right now. Like Ralph's is open. What else? Where else are you going to go?
Yeah.
So it's crazy. I do want to talk to you about the pandemic because I'm always curious about people's response to it. You obviously have somewhat of a lackadaisical response because you're here without a mask.
I have a mask, but we're far enough apart.
Yeah.
But are
you someone who feels like, because the range of theories and the range of reactions is, you know, anything. So there are people who think, like I just had Ocean Galpion. He was like, it's a fucking hoax. And he was like, me and my family will think it's kind of bullshit. And there's that theory. And then there's the people like, we're all going to die.
Right. So the people who think it's a hoax, with all due respect, are idiots. And this is my problem with the hoax thing. I was talking about this on a podcast today. What's the end game?
Yeah.
Why would they do it? You know what I mean? Like, oh, Governor Newsom is out to take my freedom and shut down. Well, why?
Yeah.
Did he short stock Tesla and want to bankrupt them so he can make money in the market? You understand?
Yeah.
They never can tell me why. Everyone's behind the hoax. The reason I know it's not 5G is because I have T-Mobile. And if it had anything to do with phones, I'd be fine. Because T-Mobile service does not exist outside of a T-Mobile store. That's the only time. Yeah. No, but so no one in the conspiracy group can give me a reason for the conspiracy. It's the Democrats out to get Trump. The Democrats can't organize well enough to pick a candidate.
That's true.
Yet you think somehow they secretly developed a virus worldwide, secretly amongst themselves, and are systematically killing people, and more people are dying in blue states than red states. But they, you know, it's anytime they have a big conspiracy theory, my thing is, okay, first
what's
of all,
the end game? Yeah.
Why? Second of all, do you really think that many people can keep a secret?
Yeah.
You'd have to have so many scientists, doctors, everybody who was involved in you know, the bat. You'd have to get the bat to keep a secret. Like, you got to kill the bat. After the bat gives it to us, you got to kill the bat. Now, the other reaction, we're all going to die. No, just like everything else, common sense dictates, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just talked about this in my podcast, the thing with the mask. When it first started, I didn't wear a mask because I was reading, I tend to read what doctors say, not what politicians say.
Yeah.
And they said, you don't need a mask, right? This is in March, early April. Then they were like, well, you need a mask to keep from breathing it on other people. The mask doesn't protect you, protects other people, right? And I didn't know where to get a mask. I went on Facebook. I said, where do you find a mask? And people were like, oh, here's where you get one. Here's where you get. Some guy was cool. He said, listen, man, meet me in this parking lot. Like, it was like a dope deal. He's like, I got masks. Meet me in this parking lot. I'll give you some masks.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's because
I didn't know where to get them. And he had them. So anyway, I talked about this last week. What's the big deal? If they say when you go into Ralph's or Target or whatever, put a mask on.
Yeah.
So I keep masks in my car. I got a mask in my jacket when I'm on a motorcycle. When I go in somewhere, it takes me about 30 seconds, put the mask on, do whatever I got to do, come out, take the mask off.
Yeah.
Not the end of the world. The governor ain't out to take my freedom. No one's out to kill me. Being polite.
I remember when it first started, I think we did the last show at the Laugh Factory.
Yes, yes.
And it was right at the beginning of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you were like, look, I thought you were 6'5". You're 6'3"?
Yeah.
You're just a fucking giant, whatever it is. So you was like, look, I'm a giant black man. I'm not going to wear a fucking mask.
Right.
That's not a good look for me. People are going to run.
Well, let me tell you about that. And this is hilarious. So in March, this is what it's like to be black in a pandemic. Let me tell you, Bill. In March, there were two black guys in Illinois, somewhere outside of Chicago, and they were wearing a mask in a Walmart. And the cops chased them out of the Walmart and hassled them and all this and all that, right? In April, there was a brother in Philadelphia on the bus not wearing a mask, and they dragged him off the bus and they beat him up. And I said, it's not the mask. It's being black is more dangerous than a mask. You know, it's... I joke about it, but as you know, jokes are based in reality.
Of course.
So it was like, yeah, if I'm wearing a mask and a hoodie walking into a bank, like, I'm not worried about the virus. You know, I'm worried about one of these gun-toting assholes from Michigan.
Now, do you, I get that. Do you feel, because I know you travel everywhere, obviously. Yeah. You go to a lot of red states when you perform. Do you ever feel... And this is something I guess I can't really relate to as just like a cracker-ass cracker. But like, are you ever in these situations like, I got to get the fuck off the street now? Does it ever feel that way?
No. For a number of reasons. For one thing, when you're doing comedy shows, like those, the guys who are walking around downtown Raleigh carrying rocket launchers, they never go to a comedy club.
Yeah.
They're the angriest people, man. They're just fucking angry and they're afraid and... So I don't have to encounter them. Also, and these are all Trump people, right? When they see my picture, they ain't coming to the show.
Yeah.
See, they see your picture, they might go to the show because they might think, oh, he's one of us, you know? Yeah. And I don't really know your politics, but I know you as a person with common sense, so I don't think you're, you know, an extremist or anything. But that's the difference. But when I'm walking around, I used to get more of... people being afraid, and you know, the white people crossing the street was very real. I've aged out of that.
Yeah.
As I'm at an age now where they're like, "Nah, he's not a threat." 20 years ago, 20 years ago, he scared the shit out of me. But now, and honestly, driving while black, right? Now I'm old enough to have a BMW or a Mercedes. That's why they don't pull me over. I've always loved cars, man. In my 20s. I got pulled over like you just kept your license and registration ready. I mean, I remember I had this Corvette. I was 21. I had a Corvette. I got pulled over so much in that thing. You know what I mean? It was just, that was just part of the game. And all of my friends, we worked at Lockheed. We were young kids who had great jobs, so we had nice cars. We were making too much money to be 19, 20 or whatever, you know? And cars were our toys. So, yeah, we knew, especially working in Burbank, it was like, yeah, you're going to get pulled over.
Yeah.
As soon as you get there, you got to just, this is my car.
So you had like a protocol about how you react to it. Like, here we go.
Well, you
again.
Had
Here's
to,
my thing.
You know, the whole thing is true, man. Okay, I'll tell you how it is. Pulled over. All right. Both hands on top of the steering wheel. Take your left hand, reach outside the window, open the car door from the outside, put your hands out, step out of the car, put your hands on the hood or lay down on the ground. And that was just to be pulled over and checked.
So you get out of the car before they ask you to get out?
No, this is what they would have you do.
Okay, okay.
They would instruct you to do this from their car.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, the point being is this could be for rolling through a stop sign.
Sure.
Or whatever, like that's just what it was. In the 80s, And this was part of the OJ thing, right? In the 80s, we had a police chief here called Darryl Gates.
Uh-huh.
And this guy was as racist as they come, and he hired racist cops. He'd go down to Alabama and Arkansas and recruit. Like, this is
really?
All this
Jesus
is all proven.
Christ.
This is why in the OJ thing, when people said the evidence was planted and all that, this is why it was believable. Because everyone knew what a racist the police chief was. So it was like, this is a rich celebrity black person. Like, there was a famous case of Marcus Allen. You remember Marcus Allen, running back?
For the Raiders.
So Marcus Allen's driving a Ferrari, and he gets pulled over. And this cop has him face down on the ground. And another cop pulls up, and he's like, the fuck are you doing? And he's like, his registration's wrong. And the cop's like, the hell is wrong with you? Do you know who that is? He mixed up registration. Marcus Allen, he got more than one car. So he had, like, the registration from his Mercedes in his Ferrari, whatever it was. Yeah, and it was like, man, if they're jacking Marcus Allen, I don't stand a chance, Bill. If Marcus Allen can't have a nice car, Lonzo Bowden better be walking.
Yeah.
Which in itself is risky.
I also want to talk about a little bit of your history, because it always fascinates me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have similar backgrounds, but I have an aerospace engineering degree from college. Mm-hmm. And there was a time I interviewed at NASA at one point.
Wow, you were going to be a rocket scientist.
Yeah. I mean, I got my degree.
You must be a horrible disappointment to your parents.
Tell me about it. Both my brothers are doctors, and they both married doctors.
Are you sure you're not Asian? Because you're literally giving an Asian bit right now.
Oh, really?
Every Asian comic, their parent wanted them to be a doctor, and then Dr. Ken actually did it and then turned movie star. I don't think his parents complained.
Yeah, exactly.
But
no, I'm definitely. But I never I interviewed NASA, and I remember thinking it just seemed, it was a lot of cubicles and boring nerds, and I was like, I don't know if this is for me. But you actually went into aeronautics now as an engineer, right?
No, I was a mechanic, actually. I started out. My first job, I went to aviation high school in New York. I got my licenses, called an A&P license, which you need to work on aircraft. And I got hired by Lockheed in Burbank. That's how I moved to L.A.
Must have been a fucking great job in the 90s or whatever?
80s.
80s. 80,
1980, man. I got hired by Lockheed in June of 80.
Actually, and it must have been on fire then.
Yeah.
Lockheed.
It was.
Yeah.
There were 20,000 people. It was a city.
Yeah.
And we were building the stealth fighter. They were building a few planes, but I worked on the stealth fighter, the F-117, which it was funny because it was all top secret, right? So I'm 18, and I have to get a secret security clearance. So my boys, who I grew up in New York, they're, yo, man, what'd you do? And I'm like, what? Yo, man, the FBI was asking about you, you know? It's like, of course, they only had to check me to when I was 18, which was a matter of months, so it wasn't a big deal. But anyway... Yes, so that was my first career. I did that. I worked on a stealth for like 3.5 years, and I got laid off. Then I started bouncing around doing a lot of different commercial and modification stuff. But I was in the aerospace industry for 10 years, and then I started training new mechanics. That's where the comedy came in. Like, I was always, you could always make
people
laugh.
You were
always funny. But I'd never been in front of the room. And from the first day I taught, when I went to the front of the room, it didn't bother me at all. I wasn't the least bit nervous. Yeah. Like a lot of people, you know, public speaking, stage fright. Mm-hmm. It was fine. And then, so after a couple of years of that, the two kind of came together. I said, man, I want to try comedy, right? And I was talking about it for about a year before I did it, because I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how
you come up with material.
Yeah. How do you start? And the girl I was with at the time, she gave me this ad for a comedy writing class. And the graduation was due 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the class, and I did the 5 minutes.
Was that in L.A.?
Yeah, it was in Santa Monica. And I got hooked instantly. And then I got laid off. I was working at McDonnell Douglas, and I got laid off. And I just made an agreement with myself to never work on planes again. And I started chasing comedy, you know. But I started late, man. I started at 30.
Wow,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
I think,
but, you know, it's worked out.
It has worked out. Now, here, there's something I wanted to ask you about, and this might be, you might like this question or you might hate this question, but it's coming from the purest heart.
Yeah.
You should be a household name. You're one of the best comics ever. And I think in the comedy world, people know that, but I put you up with Louis C.K. and I kind of go, it's not like I know you're an unusually cast comic, you know what I mean?
Right.
Your type and stuff. But also Louis C.K. is like a balding fat ginger,
man,
so.
I really appreciate that. It doesn't hurt my feelings. You know, back when we were doing Last Comic and stuff, and I've known Jay Moore for a long time. I knew him before Last Comic. And Jay would always be, you are the most underrated comic in the world. And I appreciated that. And I've never been good at publicity.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. I love the work, man. I mean, you know, I just love the work. I love the creativity. I never learned the publicity side. Even now, like my social media, I finally got a good person doing it, and it's growing fat because, you know, the social media thing, right? Me and Heffron joke about it. So John Heffron and I, we've kind of paralleled each other. We've competed against each other on like Star Search, Next Big Star, Last Comic Standing. You know, he won season two, I won three. We're old friends and this and that, right? And we joke about it that we missed the Tonight Show. We missed the 80s.
Yeah.
Because we both started in the early 90s. George Wallace used to always tell me, he said, man, you good. He said, man, if you was around in the 80s, you'd have made a lot of money. He said, I made a lot of money. You ain't make shit because you weren't around, but you would have made, you know. So we missed that, right? And that was when you wanted to get on Carson and blah, blah, blah. So we missed that era. Then when social media started, say around 05, 06, not even then, more like 07, 08, 09, we were too old. So we literally timed it perfectly to end up in the middle. We were like right there. Like we joked that when we won Last Comic Standing, we had tens of thousands of MySpace friends.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
Hilarious.
So, I mean, I could sit back and you know who helps me a lot with this? Dom Herrera. And when I say helps me a lot, it's watching Dom. Now, there's another guy. You talk about who should be a household name. You talk about legendary, famous, funny, right? And friends, you know, his friends, the 80s guys, were tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And these are guys who probably opened for Dom, right?
Yeah.
But Dom never, I never see Dom bitter about it, you know? And that's kind of what I learned from him. I mean, this game, it is what it is. I tell people all the time, like, I do all right. I'd love to be a millionaire. I'd love to have a few million dollars in the bank because then that's security and you don't have to worry about shit, you know, and you're okay. But I love the respect I get from other comics. That's what I get.
You never hear anyone talking shit about Alonzo.
I've worked with the absolute best in the business all over the world. You know, me and Dom were talking about that. We're headliners worldwide. I've headlined in the UK. I've headlined in Australia. Anywhere they speak English, I've headlined.
Yeah.
Pakistan. I don't give a shit. I headline Pakistan. So that's the kind of thing I have. So I do appreciate you saying that. And it's funny, I became one of the old guys about 7 or 8 years ago. And I knew I was becoming one of the old guys when the young guys were asking me shit that I remembered asking. And I knew the answer. And I was like, oh shit, I'm an old guy. What happened, you know? It is what it is, man. It's such a, I call it the lottery business. You know, we're in the, I could still make it, right? I could,
of
something
course.
Could happen.
And by the way, you have, though.
No,
you
no
also
I know,
have,
I know,
you know.
But you know what I mean. Like, like you say, household name or millions of dollars. And I've seen it, you know, Billy Gardell's a buddy of mine. He's another guy. Funny, nicest guy in the world. Everybody loved him. When Billy got Mike and Molly, he was about to move back to Pittsburgh and do radio.
Wow.
And then he got a show and it became a syndicated show and it, you know, everything changed. And so you really, you don't know. Jeff Garcia, I don't know if you know Jeff.
Uh-huh.
Jeff told me, Jeff got into voiceover and he did some movie with Robin Williams. It might've been Aladdin or something like that. I don't know what it was. But he said, Robin Williams told him, yeah, you keep trying to make it until you don't. And it was like, yeah. It, you know, so, I mean, I'm all right, but thank you. I appreciate the compliment. And there's times when it gets frustrating. There's times where I'm like, damn, what am I not doing?
Yeah.
How did I miss? But it is what it is, you know? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, it's also one of those things, like, if you, I'm not a jazz aficionado, but if you talk to real jazz aficionados, they go, you got to listen to El Salvador de Day. And I go, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he's only the best six-string guitar player in the fucking world, and everyone in the jazz world is like, this is the fucking guy. But outside the jazz world, people are like, who is that guy? In a way, you kind of want to be that guy, too. You know what I mean?
I love that you mentioned jazz, because, you know, I'm a huge jazz fan, and I do these jazz cruises and host jazz festivals. And
I know that.
Yeah, and I know a lot of jazz musicians. And I tell people, like, yeah, I know some of the best musicians in the world. You know, when they do the Grammys, the best musicians are there in the daytime.
Yeah.
You don't see Wayne Shorter get his Grammy. You don't see, people have heard of Herbie Hancock because of Rocket, but they don't know everything. Or Chick Corea. These are like, when Chick Corea plays a piano, piano players just stop what they're doing. And they're like, oh, that's how it's done, you know, or Marcus Miller or Stanley Clark on the bass or whatever, you know. These guys, there's a guy named Paul Jackson Jr. that we joke about. He's on every record. If you Google Paul Jackson Jr., he's the session guitarist on thousands of records and hundreds of hits. And you never know who he is, because what they do is they play pop stuff, R&B, hip hop, rock, whatever, to get their paycheck. But their passion is playing jazz, and that's when you hear their talent. So yeah, I know some of those guys that you're talking about, you know, and people don't know their names, and they're incredible. Like, if you hear a woman named Diane Reeves, if you hear her sing, you're like, oh, okay, it's done. No disrespect to Beyonce or Lady Gaga or, you know, Katy Perry or anybody else who sells millions of records and makes millions of dollars. If they hear Diane Reeves sing, they're like, well, that's Diane Reeves. So they, you know, that, you know, it's like playing ball, right? You're a ball player, but then there's Jordan and LeBron and Magic and Bird and Kobe, guys who played it on another level, where you're the fifth guy on the bench. You're like, yeah, well, I don't do that. That's a different.
Yeah, and of course, sports is different, because sports, like, the metric for sports is, if you are the best, you will become the most famous one. But that's
usually
not the same.
Yeah.
Usually,
but,
yeah.
But in music, no, music doesn't.
Music and comedy as well,
Music and comedy, you know. And again, you know that there's some hilarious guy, you know, in Iowa or Florida or somewhere that you haven't seen. And then you see a set and you're like, wow.
Jesus Christ.
But things have to fall into place. So I was, and the other thing that was, I started in L.A., right? And I joke about the fact that I started in L.A. because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to. So my education, man, when I did the open mic at the Laugh Factory, right? You know how that is. You wait in line for 8 hours to do your 3 minutes.
And Jamie talks to you, buddy.
Jamie talks to you, and he hired me to be a doorman. He said, I need a doorman.
That's right. You were a doorman.
And so I would be there every night hoping people didn't show up, right? Because that's the only time I would get stage time, if people were late or they didn't show up. So I'm watching, literally every night I'm watching Damon Wayans, George Lopez, Dom Herrera.
Was Pryor around then too?
No, Pryor wasn't around, but I mean, Rodney Dangerfield used to drop in. But these were the regulars. The regular roster was like George Wallace, George Lopez, Damon, Dom, and every night I'm watching these guys work, and it was like, oh, so I'm going to master class every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk to them a little bit and you just learn things. And so then when I got thrown on stage, man, I remember one night.
So you're working as security and you got thrown on. Exactly.
Well, yeah. If people didn't show up or whatever, I would get spots. Right. That was my whole reason for being there. And I remember one night, man, Chris Rock went up at about 10. And Chris Tucker went up at about 11. And then I went up at like 12:30, 12:45. You know what I mean?
Whoa.
So it was, and I joked, because both of them were joking about their family asking them for money, because this is in the early, mid-90s when they're both becoming stars. Right. It was after Friday, and Chris was coming off of SNL, Living Color, you know. So they're starting to make it, right? And I said, man, if I ever make $10 million and complain about my cousin asking for money, you guys just come up here and whip my ass, you know. And the whole crowd started laughing, because it was like, man, you made $10 million off Friday. I think you all right if mama want a few dollars, you know. But anyway, but it was just to be around that and to work with them. And you, so you, maybe I was becoming good and not even realizing it because I was around people who were so great. And Frasier had Frasier Smith After Midnight. That was another thing, man. That show was every Friday at around, I don't know, it started 12:30, 1 in the morning. He was on KLSX, big time radio station. It's a huge show. Everyone came to that show. We would have porn stars to Lakers. Like, everybody was in the audience. Rockstar, it was a hang.
Yeah.
So Frasier heard me one time. He's like, wow. He said, hey, you want to, you know, open up my show, write some stuff and this and that. So I was opening. So I was doing a new 5 minutes every week. I had to do new five every week to open that show and be around that. So that was another, you know, the education, man. That was the education.
And people don't realize who are, that is fucking difficult to have 5 minutes of material that you can present to an audience that you're
right.
every week. You know, it's not easy to do that shit.
But you know what was great? I didn't know it wasn't.
Yeah.
See, that was what was great was I didn't know that you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I did it. Had I known that, man, 5 minutes every week is impossible. You can't do a new five every week. Then I probably wouldn't have done
it. So true.
But the fact that I didn't know. And remember, I'm watching, you know, George Wallace. He got that damn pad with him at all times. George is never not writing a new joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And Tom Dreesen, same way. Yeah.
Yeah. And Damon Wayans, I watched Damon. So he had done a thing called Damon's Last Stand. He said he wasn't going to do stand-up anymore. It was like an HBO special or something. Then, of course, after a few months, he was like, I got to do stand-up again. And I watched him. He built a new half hour. He would come to the Laugh Factory for an hour every night,
wow.
like late night, just do it. And I watched him build a new hour over a, you know, six-month period or whatever. So yeah, it was a masterclass.
Yeah. You're also one of the comics that I watch. I don't think I've ever seen you do the same set twice. Not that comics who do the same set are bad or worse comics. It's a different style. But I have massive respect for people where I'll go like we did the live stream at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
So the virus kicks in. We're quarantined. The Laugh Factory starts doing live stream. And people show up and they're doing their A hits because there's no audience. So there's no feedback. There's no laughter. And as you know, most people, when there's no laughter, they're like, I'm not going to try fucking new shit.
Right.
I'm just going to do my fucking, like, press play on the tape machine and fucking power through with my A material. And I was just watching you did a completely crafted set based around the coronavirus. It was like half hour. I was like, this motherfucker. What? That's not right.
Again, man, because I love the art, right? And that's the art. And it's like, what do you have to lose? Why wouldn't you do new material? You're doing it for no audience in the middle of the afternoon to YouTube. Why not do new shit? And, you know, I've done it a couple of times and I joke about bombing because I was like, now I have a new story. Like when they ask, what's the worst you've ever bombed? Oh, that would have to be April 16th at the Laugh Factory at 3 p.m. Yeah. Fortunately, no one heard it. And yet everyone heard it, you know? So, yeah, man, that's just from the creative standpoint of the love of stand-up. Like, why wouldn't I do that? As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people trashing that. There are a lot of comics trashing this online, right? Saying that, you know, oh, you're doing it in a Zoom meeting or you're doing a live stream and it's not real comedy. There's no audience, this and that. It's like, well, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
I could either do that or I could be like you sitting at home, like Kathleen Madigan used to always talk about it when comics, back when they had the forums and this and that, she'd be like, yeah, just a bunch of angry middle acts.
Yeah.
You know, just a bunch of angry middle acts talking shit about people who are working.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're trying to make it work because what else are you going to do?
Yeah, and so, that's going to be the reality for a while now.
We don't know how long this is going to last or what it's going to be, so we're all trying to figure it out,
yeah,
right?
It's like in the 80s during AIDS, like when you wore condoms. Like, you don't want to wear condoms. You don't prefer it, but, like,
right.
you have to so you don't get the disease. It's like, that's comedy on Zoom. It's the same right. fucking mentality.
And then you realize that condom was going to save you on child support. And you were like, this ain't a bad idea, man. I ain't got to worry about it. Let me tell you. I'll tell you, Bill, 2008 was a celebration for me because we started wearing condoms in 1990. And when 2008 came, I said, well, if he was mine, he's 18 now, so I ain't got to worry about him. I'm off the hook. If I got one out there, they're 18. I ain't got shit to worry about.
Yeah. You're also one of these people who, and I used to think this about Judah Friedlander. You know Judah Friedlander.
Love Judah.
Love him too. But he's also one of those guys, like, you don't really know much about his personal life. Like, if Judah, if it ends up that Judah has is married with four kids, I'd be like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But if he was just, like, crushing puss every night, I'd also be like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I don't know if you're just single by choice, married, or what you got a girl waiting
you
for
know,
you.
You know, a long time ago, I heard Lewis Black say, because Lou never got married. Lou, you know, he's, married to this shit. And that's what it is. I'm married to this shit. No, I date. You know, I've been in relationships, out of relationship. For one thing, remember, I started late, right? So I started when I was 30. So I went through my chasing pussy phase, but it wasn't as long because I was already older. You know what I mean? I was already kind of, you know, when you get in your 40s, man, if you're in your 40s in the green room trying to bang a 22-year-old waitress, that's just fucking sad at that point. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, it happens. Listen. I had an experience where this chick, she was great. She said, you're going to be my old guy, right? She was crazy hot. She said, I have 10 guys I want to sleep with before I get married, and you're going to be my old guy. I was like 45, and she was like maybe 21, 22, and I was like, I'll be that.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that sacrifice. I'm going to be your old guy.
I don't want to, but for you.
So you can cross that off your list, you know? So, yeah, so that, but... And the other thing is, man, I've been sober, you know, I mean, I did my cocaine thing in the 80s, right?
Oh, really?
I went through all of that, and I went to rehab. Again, my timing is bad, so I went to rehab in 88. Nobody was going to rehab in 88. Wouldn't get no press for going to rehab in 88. Bill, nobody gave a shit, but I've been clean and sober since. So my whole career, I've been clean and sober. So I have no problem with people getting high, smoking weed, drinking, doing whatever they do, but I don't do it.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, so it's, so that world, it's like, do your thing, but I'm not going, you know what I mean?
Yeah, makes sense.
Because I've been there, done that. I don't knock it because, hey, whatever works for you, if it's fun, this or that. But at the same time, I've already done that, you know? So like, listen, you want to smoke a little weed after the show. It's like, listen, man, I used to smoke crack. So yeah,
did you really smoke crack?
Yeah, yeah. It was the 80s, Bill. What we did. So it's like your blunt don't impress me.
Yeah.
Your blunt ain't gonna. No, that ain't gonna do it for me. I've been big time. You understand? They did TV specials about shit I did.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, so that's why I'm not that guy. And I hang out. I like hanging out with comics because they get it. I like talking to comics who are serious about it. Who, you know, not the bullshit, but the ones who love it. And you know how that is. You know, comics recognize comics, and we recognize bullshit, you know. But yeah, I can sit and talk with comics for hours about comedy and everything that goes with it. Like, we were talking about this, man. I haven't not been to an airport in this long in over 20 years.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know how weird it is to not have to be at the airport? Like, right now, I don't have any flights booked. On my apps, I canceled the last one this week. I can't tell you the last time I didn't have a flight booked somewhere.
Yeah.
Got to be going somewhere, you know? So that kind of thing. So when you could talk to comics about it. I remember after 9/11 bumping into Doug Stanhope at the airport at like 5 in the morning. And we might have been the only two people there because it's like, yeah, comics, we're going back to work. We got to, you know, and it was cool. So those are the kind of things that I love being a comic because we get it.
Yeah.
We understand each other with shit like that, that other people don't. So, yeah, man, I like hanging out. But no, I'm not the party guy. I'm not chasing, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Like, we were joking about Dane. Like, Dane, again, this is why I called him a rock star. It was like, every woman loved him. Every man wanted to be his friend.
Yeah.
You know, D'Elia. D'Elia's like that, man. I'd be like, what the hell? What kind of magic do you have? And we laugh about it. But, you know, it's cool. And you know, he's doing whatever. But it was like, there was just a period where I would see D'Elia, and these women would be, like, stunningly hot.
Yeah.
Just, and I'm like, what the hell?
Still,
I did
still
20. Yeah. I did 20 at the Laugh Factory. They didn't give me one of those.
Yeah.
How'd you do that, you know?
I had a funny moment just yesterday. I bumped into D'Elia at a Coffee Bean. I was walking down the street. I bumped into him. And we just talked for like 20 minutes, wherever. I walked away. And then a comic messaged me on Instagram and said, I saw you talking to D'Elia at the Coffee Bean. And no, he goes, I saw you at this Coffee Bean. I was going to stop and say hi, but I saw D'Elia there. So then I think, does she hate him? Is there a beef? And I go, well, why didn't you? He goes, well, my hair looked bad. I didn't want him to see me like that. I'm like, I guess it doesn't matter if I see you with shitty hair, but if D'Elia sees you sit here, like, there goes your fucking career or whatever the fuck it is.
He and I used to bump into each other at the Ralphs in Studio City at like between two and three in the morning on Fridays and Saturdays, like after the last set. It was the most random thing, but it happened over and over. I think we talked more there than we did, you know, upstairs at the factory.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. It's funny. But so that happens, you know, and then you got the guys who are just hounds. Believe me, I knew guys, especially in the 90s, man, if there was a Me Too, if there was video on phone.
Oh, shit.
I know guys who would still be in jail today.
If one of those guys is Eddie Griffin, I've already fucking threatened that guy on fucking social media. So
There's guys who would still be in jail today if there was a Me Too back then. It was crazy that shit went on the road in green rooms, and it was madness.
Yeah. Were people, was roofies like a thing that people did, like, because I always thought that roofies were almost like apocryphal. Like, I've never, women were like, oh my God, I got roofied. I'm like, no, you had 17 Jaeger bombs, you fucking mess.
Yeah, it was, I think it was both comics didn't roofie.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys were doing that. Yeah, people were doing that. I don't know how much, you know, I really don't know how much, but I do know, like, there were comics, there were headliners, like, if a woman wanted to open her middle, she had to fuck him.
That blows my mind.
And I would be like, how do you even ask that?
How's that God? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you even ask that of a woman comic? But it was like, yeah, it was, yeah, you had to. That was just a given,
yeah.
You know, that if you want to open for so-and-so and whatnot. And then there was, you know, the waitresses at comedy clubs, they'd be like, man, don't do it. Don't do it, because you hook up with a waitress, it's going to end badly, and they're going to fire you, not her.
Interesting.
And I saw that happen to guys. But there were some towns, you know, where it was like, you think you're hooking up. It's like, no, man, it's just your turn. Like, she's here every week, and she bangs the headliner. That's
Jay
her.
Leno would always, in his autobiography, he talked about, he goes, if you were on the road and you could hook up with a waitress, it meant you were a good comic, because they see everybody. If they want to fuck you,
that,
you must
be
killing it.
That was true. But then there were others who just fucked everybody who came through, you know. And we, you know, I talk about it all the time when people talk about groupies. I'm like, yeah, keep this in mind. Rock stars write love songs. Comics write jerk-off jokes.
Yeah.
Okay. Our groupie game ain't as big as they might think. It happens. I've had a few, but it doesn't. It's not what people think.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, you get so, like, you get so tired of the game, man. I remember it wasn't Miami. It might have been West Palm. And I did this show, and I'm having dinner with this woman, and she, ex-stripper, managed a strip club, right? Hot. But MILF before there was a name for it.
Before there was a category in Pornhub.
And we're having dinner, and I was like, you know, this is literally better than fucking you, because when you're on the road all the time, you do everything alone, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Now to get to sit down and have a conversation with an intelligent adult, it was like, can we just talk? Like, I don't need anything more than this, you know? And it was, she was laughing because she was like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like,
yeah.
that does happen at times, right? Where, you know, you can hook up, but it becomes the same thing after a while, you know, if you, I mean, and I'm talking about the guys who try to do it every week, like after every shit, it's like, man, that's a lot of
that's
effort.
It's exhausting.
It's a lot of time and effort for what, you know, then you're like, what did you accomplish?
I came.
You know? And then the guys who fuck around on their wives on the road, it's kind of like, so what do you think she's doing at home right now? You just plant that in their head. Like, just wonder what she's up to.
Yeah.
Like, man, fuck you. So I am just saying.
I'm just saying, yeah. Yeah. Now, do you have, so there are a couple things I want to ask you now, is like, moving forward with this, with the pandemic, do you have a prediction or idea about where comedy is going, where the industry is going? And I also want to know, like, what your kind of plans are for the future in general?
I have no timeline, but we will be back. And the reason I say comedy will be back, because we're the ones who tell the truth.
Yeah.
They can't get rid of us. We've been around since the court jester.
Yeah.
We're the ones who tell the truth, and people will always want to hear us. So, you know, they're already talking about some clubs are doing like social distance shows. I think Bricktown in Oklahoma City, I saw a thing on Twitter. I think Brad Williams was going there and they're like, we're going to be at like 30 or 40% capacity. We're going to put people at every other table and you can only sit with the people you came in with, you know. And then I was talking to a guy in Vegas and he said they're looking at doing it on rooftops and outdoors.
Oh, yeah.
Where people could, and he said comedy would be the easiest thing to be back because it's only one person on stage.
That's true.
And people can sit, people could sit in a, you know, like in a parking lot like this, 6 feet from each other and still all laugh together.
Yeah.
You know, so they're looking at bringing us back, but on a timetable, I have no idea. Now, I just bought a computer, two monitors, the light, because I got to set it up at home to do it professionally because I'm doing it so much now. Like,
yeah,
it's beyond sitting there with my laptop, you know, with half my face in shadow. It's like, because people are paying now. People are paying to come to virtual shows. So you got to make it look like a show. You got to make it look more professional. So I'm doing that, and I'm learning some stuff about computers and sound and lighting and shit like that. The stuff that I would always leave to the experts.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, look, man, I'm show up. You know, like sound check, I'm like talking to the mic. If you can hear it, it'll be fine, you know. But now I'm having to learn that kind of stuff. Fortunately, for now, I'm okay financially. I can't say that, you know, I never work again or 2 years from now, you know, I don't know, but I'm okay right now. Yeah, so we're just doing this. We're doing this kind of stuff, man, this podcast or Zooms or whatever. I'm doing, this is my job now, you know, and I'll tell you one thing, and you do this so you know the difference. It's weird because now we work in the daytime.
Yeah.
You know, listen, my prime is 10 at night, 11 at night. And ain't nothing to do 11 at night, but you know, I got to do a Zoom at 10:30 tomorrow morning. I got no business being funny at 10:30 in the damn morning, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
Yeah. And in terms of like career stuff, do you have a thing? Like my goal as an entertainer, as a creative person, has always been like, one day I want to get that crazy role and win an Oscar. It was never stadiums or Madison Square Garden. I just never thought about that when I was coming up in my 20s. But is that something you think about? Like, do you want to do like stadiums?
My last thing, I'd love to be a draw. I'd love to be.
But you are a draw.
I know, but I'm talking, you know, a 2,000-seat theater kind of draw. You know, I would love that. But I want to do a topical talk show.
Yeah.
That's in my wheelhouse, and I've come close, and I've done, you know, I've had one season of a lot of things. I had a car show for one
season.
That's
right, I remember that.
I did a talk show with Chris Collinsworth, the football guy.
Oh, wow.
We did a thing for a season. Mind of a Man was a great, like, game show network thing that D-Ray Davis hosted, and I was one of the regular, like, I was the panelist they wanted on every week. They would rotate other comics, but they wanted me there all the time, and so, you know, I used to joke with Aisha Tyler. I'd be like, wow, Aisha, what's season two like? What's it? And she's like, oh, that's when it kicks in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets good, season two, you know. And so I would love to do some topical talk. We're developing. We're working on something now. And we're pitching it. You know, we'll pitch it when we're open again.
Yeah.
You know?
But also now I think one of the things that's being seen is that we're our own studios now. You can create that talk show on
your
own terms.
The sizzle. Yeah, we're doing the sizzle reel and this and that. But, you know, it's still bigger when you get that behind you.
Of course.
When you get on, when you get a network or something like that, you know. So yeah, I would still love to do that. You know, acting-wise, I don't consider myself an actor. You know, technically I am.
I've seen you in movies.
I've done a couple.
Usually, but you're the big fucking scary bouncer type of guy.
Absolutely stereotype. Bouncer, security guy, cop, or criminal, which is cool with me. But I always wanted to be the hitman who makes fun of you before he kills you. Like, I want to be the bad guy with a sense of humor. I've always thought that was a great role. And you know, Terry Crews came along, and they were like, Alonzo, we're not going to need you ever because we have. I'll tell you this story because I told Terry this story the first time I met him. So back in late 90s, early 2000s, sometime, Schwarzenegger did this movie, and it was called The Sixth Something, but it was about cloning, right? It's The Sixth Man or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
So there were these three hitmen. It was a woman and two men. They were trying to kill him, right? And they would keep missing and killing each other, and then they'd be cloned, and they would come back, right? So I know when this was. This had to be like 98 or 99. Because I was still with William Morris, because I remember this. So I go up, and to me it was funny. And I was, and they were like, wow, we never thought of that. It's funny. We love this. So I get the call back, and you know how it is. You're trying for a big movie.
Yeah.
So I'm on the fourth call back, right? And this is why I tell people, this is when I learned your agent doesn't matter. So Schwarzenegger was with William Morris. The director was with William Morris. I'm on my fourth callback, but nobody from William Morris calls him and says, hey, put this kid in the movie, right? So Terry Crews got it. And the reason Terry got it, they said, yeah, you were funny, but he's bigger than you. Because he's, you know, coming off his NFL career. He was big, and he was yoked. I was big, but I wasn't in NFL shape, you know?
Yeah.
And they said, it just works better with him, right? So I said, when I met him, I said, so Terry, you know, fuck you for ending my movie career before it even started, right? And he laughed and he said, let me show you something. So he showed me on YouTube. He played, I think he played for the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know who he played for, but he was on the kickoff team and he's running down and this guy hit him and he's knocked out. And he said, man, if you ever get mad at me, just go to YouTube and watch me get knocked the fuck out. Cause it, you know, and, but again, that was one of those things, like who knows what might have happened had I got that. But that's the role I've always wanted to be, that the bad guy with a sense of humor about it. You know, that's the part that would make it fun.
Yeah. I mean, yes, Carolyn, you're going to say something. Terry Crews did not. Let's not put that out there. Terry Crews got sexually assaulted by a gay agent. And it was kind of interesting and weird when that happened because you're kind of like, yeah, it's important that men talk about it too. Because look, I came up doing theater in New York,
right?
Like,
so
I was the only straight guy,
right?
I mean, there's some more than you think, but like, I was pretty in my 20s, and so gay guys would grab my ass. I'm like, oh, you stop it! I wouldn't even think about it as like a weird thing. I'm like, that's gay theater people. They want to grab your ass and talk about your dick, and it never really bothered me. But I think it was interesting that he brought it up. I'm like,
well, it's also, you know, there was a lot of people like, well, you're Terry Crews, why don't you whip their ass or whatever, right? But there's also the weird thing would be if you're him in that situation, maybe you don't know your way around yet, and maybe you're thinking like, the last thing I can do as a big black guy is punch this guy in the mouth
because
it's not going to go over well.
Yes,
and then if he denies it. You know what I mean? Like he was in and he wasn't the star he is now.
Yeah.
So at that time, that's a very awkward position for him to be in. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it I don't know. There's a lot of things like that, that it's one thing from the outside looking in. And of course, the easy joke as a comic, the easy joke was like, Terry, why don't you whip his ass, blah, blah, blah. And we have to do that. We're comics. We have to do that, right? But you try to do something better than the lowest hanging fruit. But, you know, you comment on it. But, yeah, that had to be like a weird, especially if it was just a quick moment where you're not even sure. You're like, did that guy touch my dick, like, intentionally or... What? Wait a minute.
And he's a big power player in Hollywood.
What just happened?
Guy.
You know? Yeah. So that can be a weird thing. And it is true, you know, that like, take it from me. I'm a big black man. I know when we do something, it can be considered more intimidating or more like it becomes a criminal act. You know what I mean? Like when one person does it, like, cause I remember, I dated a cop. Right. When I first came out here, like one of the first women I met, didn't know she was a cop when I met her. But
this is in your cocaine days, too.
Yeah. And she said, listen, if the cops pull you over, be very careful because they shoot guys like you.
Yeah.
Because I'm from New York and New York cops were cool. Mm-hmm. The New York cops, they were like, man, I ain't writing up the paperwork. Put that joint out and get the hell. They literally, that's what they'd be like, but put that joint out and get the hell out of here. You know, they were pretty cool with ordinary people. This was before Giuliani went stupid in New York. But anyway, but she told me, she said, yeah, you're a threat just by your existence. You're, you know, because you're bigger than them.
Yeah.
And they're afraid of you, you know? Yeah. And it's one of those things. I didn't think about it because where I grew up, everyone was my size. Everybody, all the brothers was like, if you didn't hit 6 feet, it was like, man, what the hell's wrong with
you? Where'd you grow up again?
Queens.
Queens, yeah, yeah.
Jamaica, Queens. And it's like, if you, like, you hope to make 6 feet because that was just normal. So 6'2", 6'3", whatever, that was like normal. So I didn't think of myself as big until I left the neighborhood. And I'd be looking at like, yeah, I guess to you, I am kind of big. Like, I never thought of that. But, you know, it's like when people are like, man, are you in the NBA? I'm like, obviously, you've never seen anyone in the NBA. Because those guys, you know, see, there's a big difference between 6'3", 6'4", and 6'9", 6'10".
Yeah.
You know, and to be an athlete, I used to work out with those guys, man. I worked out with pro football players. It's like, I tell people, like, you don't understand how strong a human being can be.
Yeah.
If you see them, the shape that they're in,
crazy.
The strength that they, and it's like, yeah, they will hurt you. But you have to be aware of that. So getting back to the Terry Crews thing and all that again, and I don't know, but he just might have had that moment where he was like, man, don't do this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like The Rock can't hit anybody.
Yeah, of course not.
You know what I mean? He can't hit anybody. He'd be sued. He'd be in jail. Whatever. Whereas Kevin Hart can punch you right in the mouth. And people are like, oh, isn't that cute? Kevin jumped up on a stool and punched me in the mouth. It's a matter of who you are.
Hey, Lonzo, listen, man. Dude, it's so awesome that you came. Thank you. I've been begging you for a while.
Yeah, well, you know.
You're one of the best comics of all time. I'm going to fucking say that.
No, I really appreciate that. I'm honored, humbled by that. That's cool. I just, like I said, I love the fact I can work with anybody. I'll take that.
Yeah, and I look forward, and you have a special out right now on Amazon?
On Amazon, Heavy Lightweights came out last summer. When all of this ends, I will record something. I don't know what. Yeah. You talk about being ahead of the curve. Harlan Williams recorded a special with no audience in the desert by himself.
I remember that, yeah.
Damn, how did he know? How did Harlan know? He knew.
Yeah.
So who knows, man? It's we'll be out there. And I'm on social media now. Zoe Funny on Instagram and my YouTube channel. This woman, she's helping me a lot. She's cutting up clips and putting them up. So that stuff is fun. And learning it is fun. Like, I'm only 20 years behind Dane Cook. But 20 years from now, Dane, I'm being your ass, Dane. Yeah. 20 years.
Your MySpace is blowing up right now. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming. Good to see you. I'm sure hopefully I'll see you on stage soon, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Good day.